Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Yes, that's right. It is The Inside Edge here on Love Sport with me, Patrick Christies. And it is my absolute pleasure to be joined by Sussex paceman Tamal Mills and the managing editor of the Cricketer magazine, Hugh Turbeville. Tamal, how are you?
Good evening. Very well, thank you.
Good, Hugh. How are you doing?
Very good, thanks.
Fantastic. All the troops are in order, which is nice. Now, it's been tipping it down outside, and it seems to have been tipping it down for most of this summer so far. It's a record has been broken for the number of games called off at a Cricket World Cup. It's four in total. India, New Zealand, of course, was a washout today. But yeah, look, just before I wanted to get stuck into kind of what goes on behind the scenes when the rain breaks happen, because if it's anything like club cricket, right, it's total madness. But I believe, Hugh, that you've got a little bit to say on rain breaks yourself, have you? Go on, get stuck
the big
in.
Build up.
Better be good.
We had a story in the magazine, Cricketer, about Graham Gooch did an interview with us, and he told an anecdote about how he used to play bridge with John Embury of Middlesex. And so Gooch played with Clem Driver, the Essex and England scorer, and Embury would come through for Middlesex. And the two of them were so inseparable that the Middlesex players eventually flinged Embury's kit into the Essex changing room. So.
Fantastic. Yeah,
I'm not sure it was. Yeah. I hope it did the.
It lived up to my billing. It's better than any story I've ever told on radio. So don't worry about that. Look, I want to know, right? Because at club cricket, I'll be brutally honest with you, what happens is we all sit there in our kind of like the Lycra kind of box pants, and we just desperately try and throw cricket balls at each other, right? So is it anything like that in the professional game? Please tell me it is.
You'll be surprised. I'm sure it differs changing room to changing room. Kind of corridor changing room cricket's always a popular one. You know, boys have just got obviously nothing better to do with their time. You'll always find not the whole team, but you'll get four or five. If it's really raining, they'll get, you know, the skinny bat out, yeah, and you know, an incredible, and guys will be, you know, illegally throwing off spinners, and guys like me will be trying to hit it, can't pick which way it's going. But yeah, you got that. You got guys just dossing around. You know, you're on your phone doing a crossword on the, you know, on the paper. It's really not that exciting, I'm afraid.
That's good to hear. You do different things, actually, because I was hoping you wouldn't say that everybody's just on their iPhones the whole time.
Unfortunately, that is a large part of it.
That's disappointing, isn't it?
Guys will take breaks.
Yeah, fine. So it's just Candy Crush. Relentless Candy Crush. Absolutely. Who's the biggest dressing room joker, do you reckon, Sval? You look like you might be quite good for a laugh behind the scenes.
I've got a few scenes. We've got a lad at Sussex, Phil Salt. He's mental, to put it lightly. He's always up to no good. He gets bored very easily and very quickly, which obviously, if you're rained off for multiple hours at the cricket, isn't a good mixture. I know the West Indian boys, they like, you know, the music will be pumping then. They're all dancing around, killing time that way. So, yeah, it's always an interesting one.
Fantastic. Well, look, we are going to come on to England, West Indies. But before that, Hugh, I wanted to pick your brains because I got it badly wrong at the start of this World Cup, just showing my general kind of lack of intelligence, really. I'd assumed, all right, game's rained off, we'll play it again tomorrow. Of course, that's not able to happen. So we have set a record now, as I've said, for the most games rained off at a Cricket World Cup. But it seems like the reserve days issue is quite complex, Hugh. I was wondering if you might be able to explain it a little bit for us.
I think there's 48 matches in the World Cup over a ridiculously long 50 days, and they just want one game a day for the sake of TV, particularly the huge audience in Asia that lap up the games, one a day. I suppose for a game to carry on would interfere with, you know, if it was today's match, would interfere with tomorrow's coverage, I guess. You'd think there was scope for some replays over 48 days. I mean, the World Cup's too long anyway. It should be 28, shouldn't it, really?
Well, you'd thought so,
I think so. I mean, England have had the World Cup before, though, in 75, 79, 83, 99, so...
That's good information. Yeah.
To say that they, you know, they're not equipped to host it, I'd probably be a bit harsh. We've hosted it before with great success. The weather was fantastic in 75.
Yeah, well, I'm from Manchester, so this is tropical for me now, so I'm all right.
Like, that's a bit of a worry. We haven't got there yet, have we?
The tournament's about to go up north, isn't it?
Yeah, beyond the wall.
I feel sorry for Bristol. I mean, they've lost 20 grand, haven't they, apparently?
Really? Oh,
yeah. That doesn't sound that much, but it's probably a lot for County.
But is it not a bit unfair on certain teams? Because I get that this is just the way it goes, right? But like, you know, if your game against Afghanistan is called off, but then you end up playing against India, then you are at a disadvantage, aren't you, Ready Smile?
Yeah, potentially. Obviously, you'd rather get rained off against certain teams, I'm sure. South Africa obviously have been pummeled in their first three games. West Indies had started, it was a very short game, but the West Indies had started very well against South Africa. So I'm sure, we'll speak to Carlos Braithwaite soon, but I'm sure those boys were disappointed to, only walk away from that game with 1 point. But yeah, you're right. See, New Zealand then have won 3 from 3. Then they walked away with a point against India. So they're now sitting, 3 wins and a draw, for better way of putting it, from their 4 games. They'll be really happy with that, considering they've won their first 3. So yeah, of course, in any sport, if you're a minnow as such, you can get away with getting a point against one of the top sides, you're gonna take that.
But, a wag in our office has made the joke that it's Sri Lanka's best bet to sort of accumulate the points.
Draw every game.
They've beaten Afghanistan and they've had 2 draws so far, haven't they? So
they'll get to the final, right? And their opening bats will get clean bowled. The bail won't come off, and that'll be it. Yeah, absolutely. What do you make of that? By the way, Hugh, this bails issue. We are going to talk about this a little bit later, but I mean, I think it's at least 5 times now where a ball has struck the stumps with a fair bit of force and the bails haven't come off.
Well, I suppose they'll have to look at it, won't they? When Steve Rhodes was talking about putting a man on the moon yesterday, and why that a slightly fatuous sort of connection there. But I suppose using Rhodes' quote, if they did put a man on the moon in 69, I suppose they can come up with a bale that not only lights up, but is also the same weight as...
you'd have thought so, wouldn't you?
They could use moon rock or something. But
Tamar, you'd be livid, wouldn't you?
As a bowler, it's... one day wickets nowadays are hard to come by a lot of the time. Flat wickets, very good batsmen. So if you hit the stumps, you want the wicket. And there's nothing worse than taking a wicket away from a bowler. You see all the time when a catch is dropped off a bowler. No, it's a different story when we're the ones dropping the catches.
Yeah, of course.
We're complete hypocrites when it happens off our bowling. It's the worst thing. It's horrible. So I think they need to look at it. Even if it's reviewed or whatever, if the ball clearly hits the stumps. Yeah. But I don't know, it's been pretty embarrassing, hasn't it?
So yeah. To Mel and I, both Suffolk boys. Suffolk.
Right.
Yes, but... I played all my club cricket in Suffolk, and we used to use the heavy bales a lot. It's a big open county with,
a lot of wind.
They've cut all the hedgerows down. There's no hills, so it's very windy. So we've used the heavy bales a lot, so I suppose it's the same thing as that, really, isn't it?
Well, they say it, don't they? They say that it's a slightly lower weight than the heaviest bales that they sometimes use. So, like...
Right.
But it just seems like it can't all be coincidence. Like if it keeps happening, at some point we're just gonna have to go, right, look, just come on, like, this is ridiculous, draw a line under it. We are about to go to Carlos Braithwaite very shortly, but look, just before that, fingers crossed, weather permitting, at 10:30 a.m. tomorrow, England will take on the West Indies. Tomorrow, confident?
Yeah, I think so, and be interesting to see if Andre Russell's gonna play. He missed the last game with a knee injury that's kind of resurfaced, so he's a huge part of the West Indies' hopes. England obviously, Mark Wood looks like he might have a little ankle niggle, so he might sit out. Mo and Ali might come back in, but it'll be a really good test for the England, because the West Indies have already shown how dangerous they can be.
I rate this West Indies side.
I've got a sneaking feeling they might surprise us, like they did in the Caribbean. And Faf du Plessis said in the start of the tournament, the only way you can beat England is get them 4 down early on. But this West Indies attack's capable of doing that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Actually,
we come out guns blazing and we're 50 for 4, and
Yeah, well, this is it. They have got that. This is why I love watching the West Indies play cricket, right? The way that they approach one day international cricket with the bat, we've known about that for years. And it just seems like they've kind of gone back a little bit to those out and out pace men that, frankly, well, I had to watch highlights of. I'm 27. I kind of missed the boat on that a little bit. But I think it's fantastic. It's like heavy metal cricket, isn't it? And I absolutely love that. Right, you guys can get in touch. 0208 70 20 558 is the number. You can call, you can WhatsApp, you can do whatever you like. At Love Sport Radio on Twitter. When we come back, we have got the West Indian all-rounder Carlos Braithwaite on the line. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, it's the Inside Edge here on Love Sport Radio, your one-stop shop for all things cricket. And we are joined by managing editor of The Cricketer magazine, Hugh Turberville, and of course, fast bowler Tamar Mills as well. Also on the line, it is our pleasure to have West Indian all-rounder Carlos Braithwaite. Carlos, are you confident of taking on England tomorrow?
Yeah, good vibes with the team. Obviously, expecting a cracking atmosphere as well. And we've been doing well this far, so we'll roll on tomorrow.
Carlos Tejer, good to speak to you, mate. Thanks for coming on. Obviously, 1-1, lost one. Must be really disappointing to get rained off against South Africa the other day. Had them two down early, looking really good. Were the boys disappointed with the rain came in, as it's obviously been for the rest of the week, unfortunately?
Yeah, very disappointed, actually. And, you know, obviously, seeing them in the dressing room and hearing the chats, it was very, very spiriting to hear. It was very inspiring, actually, because in the past, a lot of West Indies teams would have been happy with 1 point against South Africa. But now we have the belief, the confidence, and we think we found the brand of cricket that we want to carry throughout the tournament. And we are so sure in that brand of cricket that now we feel as though 1 point gained is 1 point lost. So that was very refreshing, be it as it may, the weather. Typical in this weather, if I may say that. It just seems as though every single game you play, you have to win, because the harsh reality is you can have a few rained off and then be hoping at the back end of the tournament. So again, it was very refreshing to see the disappointment in the dressing room, and I know the guys are looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah, I think that is true, and that sentiment's been in the media as well. Teams aren't kind of talking as much of the West Indies as dark horses, but legitimate contenders, and obviously can beat any team on their day. Obviously, that's, you know, a real big test tomorrow. You obviously came close against Australia the other day, and now going against England in their own backyard, I'm sure you guys think that they're there for the taking.
I wouldn't really say they're for the taking as much, because we know the brand of cricket they play. But we're very excited by the brand of cricket that we've been playing as well. I guess starting as recently as the series against them in the Caribbean, we showed the world that we can not only compete, but we can drag the number one team in the world very close. And I mean, who knows what would have happened in that third ODI that was rained off in Grenada. We could have come very close to winning the series. So I don't think they're there for the taking as much. They've been playing very good cricket as well. But I do think that, you know, it's a titanic showdown, and whoever plays the better cricket on the day, whether it be shortened or normal length 50-over game, should come out on top.
Hi, Carlos. It's Hugh here. Are you looking forward to rekindling your rivalry with Ben Stokes tomorrow?
I said it before. I think it's more media rivalry.
you can rely on me for that.
Yeah, I think it's more media rivalry. Obviously, what has happened in 2016, I surely won't forget it. Some people have told me they won't forget it either. So it's good to be on the right side of history in that regard. But as I mentioned, after that, obviously, Ben Stokes has gone on to be one of the best all-rounders in the world. Done some spectacular things in the field as far with the bat and with the ball. So for me, it's not really singling him out. It's just ready to get one up. It may happen that I may not bowl at him or he may not bowl at me. But yeah, you love going against the best players in the world. You like testing yourself against the best players in the world. He's proven that he's one of the better, if not one of the best all-rounders in the world. But this England team is talented from 1 to 11. Everyone can bat, everyone can field, and the bowling attack is very potent. So just to single out Ben Stokes, we're doing a disservice to the other 10 guys who take the park tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. And just want to ask a little bit about Jofra Archer as well. Look, I'm so glad that he's playing for us now at the minute, the way that he's been ramping up the pace, and he's really exciting to watch. And how does it feel, though, kind of in the West Indian side? Because obviously, look, he was born in Barbados. Or are you guys just professional? You just crack on? You don't really think about it?
Yeah, I bought dinner for him last night. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Off the field, we're still good friends. We play for the same local club, or used to play for the same local club in Barbados, although we've never actually played a game together for the club. And there's affiliation there from when he was in and around the Barbados setup before he made his big move to England and his career took off the way it did. And, you know, you meet players as big professionals and you create a good rapport with them. So someone you met from very young who's from your island as well, obviously would have a special part emotionally. I don't know how his emotions would be. Hopefully they're a bit scrambled and we can get the better of him from that regard. But whether he does well or whether he does poorly, he's still my friend at the end of the day. But once we cross that line, our friendships aside, is about doing battle for West Indies, and I'm sure he'll be thinking the same for England.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously all eyes at the moment are on the World Cup and trying to do as best as you can, sorry, here. But looking forward, I think signs for the West Indies cricket are really positive. You've got, obviously, O'Shane Thomas with the ball, bowling serious heat. Nicholas Poran, Shimron Hetmeyer, Shai Hope. These are kind of young guys with a bat. They're getting lots of opportunity, and they're showing their class on the international stage. That must be really encouraging for the future of West Indies cricket.
Yeah, it's very encouraging. I think, obviously, what you see on the field is very impressive. But I'm privileged enough to see off the field is even more inspiring for me. The way that these guys train, I know worldwide it's thought that West Indians just rock up and play and party. We don't train as hard as everyone. We don't eat as well as everyone.
I'm sure there's a bit of partying still, mate.
Yeah. Well, there'll be a lot of partying. But when we're on the training ground, it's just impressive to see the guys work great in the gym on off days. I mean, we don't see, and I guess we're seeing cricketers don't get applauded for that side of the game, but there's definitely been a shift where the younger guys are more in tune with the bodies, the professional side of stuff, and it's not just calypso cricket, but is attention to detail to ensure that we could execute the brand of cricket that we want to.
Good stuff. All right, T. All right, thank you very, very much. Cheers for coming on. Right, Carlos, thank you so much. Carlos Brathwaite there, West Indian all-rounder. Going to be seeing him ramp it up tomorrow, no doubt, as England look to take on the West Indies. Exciting West Indies team. And you wanted to get your take on the fact that, look, Jofra Archer, before he emerged, and it turns out he's absolutely sensational, right? And we've seen him do the business here. There was this odd amount of controversy, really, about whether or not this was maybe morally the right thing to do. What is your take on that?
Just abide by the laws of the country, and the qualification period was moved from 7 to 3 years. So yeah, I'm not.
It's not.
Yeah. I'm not going to get involved.
It's just,
in that.
The rules, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no rules have been broken. He's fine. He's given his commitment. I think it's a shame for the West Indies, isn't it? I'm sure they'd love to have him, but if he wants to play for England and he's qualified, his dad's British, isn't he? So
exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
no. Absolutely. And it helps that he's very, very good as well, which is quite nice. All right. Okay.
As you say, there was a debate, wasn't there, before he was picked, and it seems ridiculous now, doesn't it? It was just this clear cut decision, wasn't it? But he's in now. But
yeah, I think we do that a bit, don't we? We like to whip up. We like to see, like, oh,
well,
great.
Well, there was a genuine sports discussion, wasn't there, about whether he should be included on the basis that the bowlers who'd got England to number one in the world for 3-4 years had sort of earned the right. But he's clearly a cut above and brings so many different dimensions to it that actually that argument went out the window, didn't it, really?
Yeah, straight away. Yeah. As soon as you see him performing, absolutely. Right, OK, stay tuned. We are going to go into a bit more detail about England versus the West Indies, which is, weather permitting, hopefully taking place at 10:30 tomorrow. Josh Butler looks to be back in the side as well, and Moeen Ali as well. 0208 7020 558 is the number to dial at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Yes, it is indeed, with me, Patrick Christie. It's the Inside Edge on Love Sport with the Cricketer magazine, and we're joined by the Cricketer's managing editor, Hugh Turbeville, as well as Sussex paceman, Tamal Mills. So, right, look, England, West Indies tomorrow, 10:30, supposedly, in Southampton, as long as this weather all holds up. And Hugh, you were saying that you think England might be in a little bit of trouble, potentially, if the West Indies fire tomorrow.
So that'd be two defeats, and Afghanistan, Sri Lanka. But they've got two tough games, the last two, Australia and India. So you can conceive of them losing four, couldn't you?
Well, yes. I don't
you've
want
to. Lost one
to.
Already, West Indies. Well, I've left New Zealand out, haven't I, actually?
Yeah. It was one of these things, because we were so, like, all before it was like, oh, we're going to hit 500. We're going to hit 500. We're favourites. We're going to win. It's come home, boys. Our name's on the trophy. And actually, now we're in it. And it's like, oh, no. What do you make of it tomorrow? Were we a bit too, did we build them up a little bit too much, do you think, or not?
No, I think the boys deserved all the plaudits and all the expectation, all the fanfare, because they've been the best side in the world for the last couple of years, both with the bat. They've been affected with the ball, and I know that Pakistan performance in the field wasn't great, but they've been one of the best fielding sides in the world as well. So I think, the boys will, it's a home World Cup as well, let's not forget. So you always, we're English, we're always going to, dream big, aren't we? We're never going to go in saying, oh, no, we're no good this year. We're, it's coming home, as we say. And
there's much more pressure in these one-off World Cup situations than the five-match one-day series against Pakistan.
Yeah, exactly.
And they lost the Champions Trophy semi-final 2 years ago to Pakistan, so it's no great surprise Pakistan beat them in a one-off situation. And then if they lost to West Indies, lost to New Zealand again, then they've got Australia into the last. So, it's not a foregone conclusion, is it? They're going to get in the semis. I know I'm Mr. Pessimist.
No, it's like, I like this.
Mr.
Like
Doom and Gloom.
No, because this is it. It's like I've got the two voices that I've got going on in my head
optimism,
now.
Pessimism.
You're both here. Yeah, exactly.
We're on your shoulders.
I've got the guy, it's coming home. Well, it might not.
Okay? I think obviously, I know we all obviously want England to win the World Cup.
Of course. Yeah.
But I think for a tournament, it's good to see upsets and losses. And, you know, there's nothing worse than, you know, in football, in rugby, wherever, seeing one team just romp home. You can appreciate how great that team may be, but you know, you want to see, you know, we love an underdog, don't we? Imagine if Afghanistan beat England or beat New Zealand. Or, for the sport, and you know, for Afghanistan's, you know, next 5-10 years going forward, those moments are really big and they're important for cricket. But you know, obviously, we hope that all kind of culminates in England still, you know, coming out and winning the World Cup. But I think it's really good. You know, Pakistan beat England and everybody was shocked. But Pakistan played really well, and you know that obviously gives Pakistan a good chance of, if they're going to have to obviously meander their way through and potentially sneak in to get through to the quarterfinals. But you know, England will understand that every team, you know, they're there for the taking, and every team's going to be coming at them looking for that scalp.
The format's been criticised, isn't it? The 10 teams playing 9 matches, not enough jeopardy. But Pakistan and the top four at the moment are England, India, New Zealand, Australia, and they're many people's tips, including mine for the semi-finals. But if Pakistan and West Indies could disrupt that jeopardy, couldn't they? They could inject some jeopardy. They could disrupt this cozy sort of lineup.
Yeah, exactly. I think definitely. Tamar, I wanted to have a chat with you about the fact that you have got Chris Gayle out. Right, that's just for me.
Just for the record,
I'd retire.
I haven't got.
Have out. You not? I've not either. Producer Josh, have you? No, it's headshakes all round. So you're the only geezer in this office who's ever done that.
Well, if nothing else, I can die a happy man.
I think I'd have retired as soon as I saw those bales come off. I'd have been like, right, I'll get my jumper from the umpire and I'm off. You just start the car. But yeah, talk me through what it's like to bowl at him, because it just seems like he's quite unpredictable. You don't quite know how he's going to get going.
Yeah, well, first of all, to bowl at him, he's a big man. I don't think until you're actually there, you know, confronted with him, he's like, you know, like these Kevin Peterson's the same. They're big guys, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". They're imposing to bowl at. They kind of cover the stumps and you feel like no matter where you bowl it, they're going to be able to hit it, if that makes sense. But at that time, this was 3 years ago now, 4 years ago, and I'm still dining out off it. But you know, long may that continue. It changed my life definitely for the better. But I think at that time I was just looking in to bowl fast, bowl at him, bowl at the stumps. And then he went for after that. He struggled with his back, and he had a real lean period. You know, he moves pretty poorly now in the field, but you know, back then he was, you know, really struggling, and I actually enjoyed bowling at him in a tournament not so long ago, because he couldn't move. He seems like he's, but then the last year or so he seems to have turned it on a bit again. You know, got his body right. We saw in the England West Indies series, you know, this was it February. He was brilliant, wasn't he? Smacking into all parts, and that's we speak about good for the game. Chris Gayle performing. If at some point in their 9 games, for the West Indies, if Chris Gayle scores 120 off 70 balls or whatever, that's good for the tournament, isn't it? Because people, you know, the casual fans, people want to see that. So again, hopefully it doesn't come against England tomorrow. We keep going back to that, but you know, I think for the game, people want to see these iconic figures do what, you know, we're known to do, and they also want to see players that we don't know who are West Indies, have a few, you know, spoke up with Carlos, guys like Shimron Hetmyer, Nicholas Pooran, who to the casual fan, you know, might not be too, you know, recognisable. If these guys again can score 100 off 60 balls or whatever, do something spectacular, it's good for the game.
Hetmyer was brilliant against England, wasn't he? But he had a poor IPL, didn't he?
Really poor, yeah.
It's really disappointing.
Yeah,
he came
unstuck against spin quite a bit in the IPL. Obviously, that's not going to be as prevalent here. But they've got some really, really talented batters in particular.
Is there a genuine fear factor when you've got the ball in your hand and it is Chris Gayle at the other end? Or do you just psych it out completely? It's just a job. Do you know what I mean?
It depends. It depends how you're bowling at the time. What's your form going into the game?
I'd be terrified.
Yeah, of course. Well, I think rightly so. But if you come into the game in not great form and then you've got a batsman like Gayle at the other end, of course, you're going to be a bit more standoffish. But if you're coming in good form, feeling good, you know, you're going to back yourself. When you're in that arena, you're in that arena for a reason. You're representing your country, or you're in one of these overseas leagues. You're there because you deserve to be there. So you're always going to back yourself, but sometimes you don't back yourself quite as much.
Yeah, fair play. You touched on it a little bit earlier, the fact that you quite fancy the West Indies as a bit of outsiders for this tournament, do you?
Yes, they could break that top four cartel, and yeah, I think so. Yeah, where are their weaknesses? A spin.
Yeah, they don't really have a Ashley Nurse. They're going in with one spinner, and he's not.
And you know, Fabian Allen, They don't. Neither of them spin it much.
Exactly. Fabian Allen hasn't played yet.
It's a bit one track the attack, isn't it? I suppose.
A little bit, yeah. And the big worry for me is fitness and Andre Russell being the main. So
yeah, and Gale in the field, and a few people in the field.
Yeah,
not,
yeah. Exactly. But Russell's over the last year, 2 years, he's really struggled with his knee. I've obviously come up against him in a lot of these overseas leagues, and he's often, sometimes he's playing and he's playing as a batter only, he's not able to bowl. Sometimes he's bowling off a really short run up. The IPL, he was kind of, some games he wasn't bowling, some games he was obviously doing both, and now he obviously went off after he bowled eight overs against Australia and had to go off and had to have a scan on his knee. So that's something that the West Indies...
Well, I mean, really all the teams have got a weakness, I think. I mean, yeah. Australia, I don't think their support bowlers are patch on Cummings and Stark. Coulton, Isle and so forth. So Behrendorff is okay, isn't he? But I think they should have picked Hazelwood, Josh Hazelwood. He's got a fantastic ODI record and is really upset that he hasn't been picked. I think England lack a kind of miser, a bowling miser like an Angus Fraser. It's all a bit kind of...
I'm not sure how well Angus Fraser would do in the 2019 World Cup.
No, he's a bit old now, yeah. But somebody sort of keep it at 4.8. All their bowlers go at about 5.8, 5.9. I'd say India didn't have a weakness, but then now Darwin's injured.
Yes, yeah. That is good. That's going to be a big mess.
If Rishabh Pant, if they do the right thing, and I saw Rishabh Pant's flown over as cover in case Darwin is out for the... I think they're playing it coy for a week to see if they can get him right. Mm. But if Rishabh Pant comes in, he should have been in the squad in the first place. That bloke's... box office. Yeah. Right. When he wasn't picked, so it was during the IPL, they announced their World Cup squad just after, and Rishabh Pant's name wasn't in that list. There was uproar from the casual cricket fan, the diehards. That guy is box office. So if he comes in, he comes in and replaces Darwin, he could become a star of this World Cup.
Yeah. I think New Zealand have got a lovely pace attack, probably lack a bit of spin like West Indies, and I think they've got two elegant batsmen in Ross Taylor and Kane Williamson, but they probably need a smasher, and they need Martin Gupta to get his form back from the last World Cup. So they've all got weaknesses. So
absolutely. Well, look, we're going to be talking, we've spoken a bit about the West Indies and a fair few other teams as well. When we come back, we're just focusing singularly on England. A bit of a boost for them as it looks like Joss Butler is fit to play. So we're going to be discussing how important that is. And also, as well, Michael Holding was reprimanded for having an opinion on the quality of umpiring so far at this World Cup. And I want to get stuck into that. At Love Sport Radio on Twitter, get your questions coming in. We'll be back very shortly.
This is Love Sport.
Yes, it is indeed. With me, Patrick Christie, is the inside edge here on Love Sport with the Cricketer magazine and the Cricketer magazine's Hugh Turbeville, as well as, of course, paceman Tamal Mills. Right, now, Joss Butler. He had a dodgy hip, but it looks like they've sorted it out right now. We've seen pictures of him training in the rain today. He was out there on a rather wet-looking outfield doing a little bit of keeping practice. Tamal, how important is it going to be for England to have Joss back in the side?
Yeah, he's one of, if not the best batsman in the world in that middle overs, end of the innings. So every team would want Joss Butler if he's available. Obviously, that's not a huge proclamation from me, but... yeah, you know, though I'm sure they might look to see if Johnny Bairstow keeps instead. Again, that's the real nice luxury this England side have, is they're not overly reliant, and Butler can just play as a batter, and you can bring Bairstow in with the gloves. But if he can play and not be too, you know, a discomfort, England will play him. But I'm sure they'll be pretty pragmatic, and they won't, you know, risk doing any harm moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what strikes me is, because he doesn't seem to be, he's not like you talked about Chris Gayle before, he's like a mountain of a human being, but Joss isn't. The way that he hits that ball, though, and the timing of it here.
It's quite incredible. I can't get over this one shot he plays where his left foot goes to the left, and he looks like he should be hitting over long on, and then it sort of plays inside out over long off. It just sort of defies the laws of physics.
Yeah. What do you reckon cricket writers like you would have been saying about that shot about 20 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say Viv Richards would have played it, wouldn't he? Well, over mid-wicket, because he used to play everything off his stumps. But this is a kind of inside-out shot. It's just extraordinary, isn't it? I've never seen anything like it.
Just keep coming up with new... I love this, though. It is brilliant. Every time you watch cricket now, you just see someone start doing something different, and the game just keeps progressing.
I've got this thing I love... players who hit to the offside in T20, I hate nothing more than seeing every ball disappear over mid-wicket. It's just a bit boring, isn't it? Like the 360 players. So Butler does that, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Do you reckon you'd get him out, T?
I've only bowled at Joss a couple of times. Played once in the Big Bash. It was middle of the Big Bash. I hadn't been bowling brilliantly going into the game, so, you know, I wasn't feeling my best. And then Yeah, he took me down. It was pretty disheartening. Oh, yeah, he's so good, you know, and you know he ramped me for six, and you know that's the one thing that, you know, if all else fails, I still bowl, you know, I bowl at good pace, and I don't often get ramped, very rarely, but yeah, Josh didn't care for my, you know, so called pace, and he put me a few rows back into the stand over the keeper.
Is that the biggest insult to fast bowl? Like when someone just ramps you, is it like a bit of a mark of disrespect?
100%. Yeah, you think how dare you? You can't ramp me. I'm too quick, and then it's often misplaced confidence.
Back over the bowler's head, didn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. But now I just don't pitch it up anymore. So if I just bowl bouncers, then they can't ramp me.
Absolutely right. Okay, well, look, Mark Wood faces a late fitness test after a bit of soreness during England's win over Bangladesh on Saturday. And Captain Owen Morgan's been talking. He says there's a chance that he could be rested for the game against the West Indies tomorrow.
We haven't bowled for pretty much 2 days, or he hasn't bowled, so he'll have to see how he bowls in the morning. And if it's still sore, we probably won't take a risk.
Also, cheeky little plug this for the other cricket show that we do earlier on, Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup show. Mark Butcher was on there and he just gave his thoughts on how he thought bowlers are now the kings over the batsmen at this Cricket World Cup.
My opinion on cricket hasn't changed a great deal in the last 20 years, and that is that no matter scoring rates, everything else, your bowlers are still the most important people by miles, because a wicket is, you know, so much more valuable than a run, you know, or 10 runs or whatever you might be. So, the, you know, yes, economy rates have gone through the sky as people have become much better at hitting boundaries, hitting sixes. But guys who can pick up 2-3 wickets in an over and suddenly change the game on his head are worth their weight in gold. And so, therefore, you know, if you look around and think that a lot of the batting lineups have got destructive players, and that's going to be a constant through the better teams, then the thing that's going to separate them is going to be their wicket taking capability, and therefore India, New Zealand, Australia, England to a certain extent are all going to be, you know, as much as they're in the top four at the moment, they're going to be there at the end because they are able to bowl people out. I mean, Pakistan on their day will be able to do a similar thing. The West Indies have proven, sort of going back to basic West Indian principles of trying to hit people on the head, have proven that they can do it too. So, you know, it's the bowlers are king, always were, always have been.
Yeah, interesting stuff that, because all the talk before the tournament was who's going to score 500. And actually, it's been quite well contained by the various bowling attacks on offer now. T, I want to get your take on this. Is it a bowler's game now, do you think?
No. No, I get what Butch is saying, and he is right. And you look at, again, these T20 leagues or international tournaments, the team, if you have the best bowling attack, batsmen win your games, bowlers win your championships, I think, because the game is slanted towards the batting and scoring runs. So if you have a bowling attack that can counteract that and bowl teams out for 250 or restrict a side to 280, then, you know, that's what then gives your batsman the best chance of winning you the game. Mm. So it depends what way you look at it. I think the way, you know, you look at, you have to have attacking spinners and fast bowlers. Obviously, the conditions in England so far, the overcast, there's been some, you know, some green wickets and the ball's been swinging a little bit. Obviously, we've seen some flat pitches as well, but, you know, we've seen a few ones that have done a bit and assisted the bowlers. But then as the tournament goes on, you might get a few more used pitches, and that's where, you know, your spinning attack will come into it as well.
Yeah, Hugh, have you been, I suppose, amazed by the bowling or disappointed by the batting? Or neither, I suppose.
Pleasantly surprised that the bowlers have recaptured a little bit of sort of authority, and that it's not just purely batsman paradise. Yeah. And I think England have got definitely the best batting side, the most potent six or seven, and they bat down to 11, which is ridiculous. But I'm not convinced England have got the best bowling attack.
Oh, gosh, he's done it again, hasn't he? He's done it again. It's like the two voices on my shoulder again. Look, I want to have a talk to you guys about Michael Holding. He's a cricketing institution, isn't he, that guy? And look, I think, quite rightly so, he was pretty critical of the umpire, and I'm pretty sure Chris Gayle would have a thing or two to say about that as well. It looked like that guy was desperate to get him out of there. But I believe you're in possession of an email that was sent round to Michael Holding. Is this right? Talk us through it.
Well, I've seen the email that's been sent to various people. I think Michael Holding was the only commentator,
right,
who had received the email, and he maintains very high standards, Michael Holding, and for him to be told that he couldn't talk about what was going on the field, I think he was pretty livid about it. Yeah. I think he left the tournament. I mean,
pretty much the production company told them, the commentators, or Michael Holding in this case, to not shine cricket in a bad light. And it's ridiculous. You're paying commentators to assess the game. And Michael Holding replied to him in the email, which has been leaked. And he was very right in saying, you've got no problem with me breaking down a batsman for bad technique, bad shot placement, poor bowling. Why can't I say if there was poor umpiring? It's an extremely valid point, isn't it?
Had this control freak a bit. You can't bring Pepsi in, you can only bring Coke, and you can't bring flags in. In previous tournaments, you can't beat drums in the Caribbean. Just sort of loosen up a bit.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Well, has the standard of umpiring at this tournament been poor, or is it just now, with all the technology that we've got and everything, we focus on it so much more here?
I haven't noticed it particularly. It was that one game, though, wasn't it? It was fast. Was it about three balls in a row?
And
one of them was to hit great Gale stumps, isn't it? When the bales didn't come off. But there were two ludicrous decisions, weren't there?
Yes.
I mean, one of them pitched about 6 inches outside leg stump, didn't it? Or a foot and a half outside leg stump, LBW. That was... anybody could see that was not out. But I mean, they make mistakes, these umpires, don't they? But
yeah, if that had happened to me on a Saturday, that would have been a bat through the wall job. You know what I mean? The helmet's gone, the pads have gone, the bat's got, he's lost it. Just leave him. Give him 10 minutes, he'll be fine when he chills out a little bit. But it must be, especially frustrating for you, I imagine, tomorrow. You run in, you give it your all, and then you know that you have just trapped someone in front, or you've gotten caught behind or something like that. And does it undermine your confidence or faith at all when you do see a fair few bad decisions in a row?
Not really. I think it does go work in swings and roundabouts, and you have the review system now and things to try and even it up a little bit. The one thing, in my opinion, where the review system isn't great is with umpires' call. There is, obviously, being it technology, it's not 100% guaranteed. So there is an element of doubt there. So if as a bowler you review a decision that's given not out, and the Hawkeye says it's going to hit the stumps but only barely hit the stumps, it's given not out.
Yeah.
Whereas you think of it in black and white terms, the ball's going to hit the stump, so it's out. But in that case, that's when it literally depends on whether the umpire's giving it out or not, if it's a very close decision. So that's the only way, I feel as a bowler you can be really aggrieved if the technology shows that you've hit the stumps, but yet you don't get the wicket for it. So it's tough, but it's a tough job being an umpire as well. Imagine you stood out there in front of, 20,000, 30,000 people. Obviously, then 13 other cricketers out immediately in front of you, putting you under pressure. You got a little microphone in your ear with whoever else speaking in your ear. It's a high pressure job, and however many millions watching at home. So,
Keith, you're going to have to reverse that decision.
Yeah, imagine that moment then when you get it done. You're wrong. Go tell everybody that you're wrong. It must be really, it's embarrassing, isn't it? So, it is a high pressure job as an umpire. It's definitely not a job that I'd like to do.
Yeah, but I think that's fair enough. And I think it must throw you a bit as well. I did feel for the umpire after it was twice in two balls, overturn reviews. He must have just wanted to walk or pull my hamstring for some reason. I'm going to have to get off or something like that. But look, when we come back, we're going to be having a chat about Yuvraj Singh, one of the more iconic players who have played the game. And certainly if you ask Stuart Broad, I imagine his image is etched into his retina there somewhere. He is hanging up his bat, and we're going to be having a chat about that tomorrow. You is also someone that you've got out. Is there anyone that we've spoken about here that you've not managed to get out?
Well, this has been a great show for me. You've teed me up really nicely.
Good man. More on this when we come back. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
Patrick Christie's here on Love Sport with the Inside Edge with the Cricketer magazine. Now, look, we're doing a little bit of a eulogy to you, Vraj, right? The big man. This guy's been an inspiration to so many people all around the world. He's provided us with, some of the best cricketing memories, certainly of my lifetime as well. And he's decided that he's going to call time on his career. What's your take on the legacy, I suppose, of you, Vraj?
I got very vivid memories of watching him play that beautifully in the 2002 NatWest Triangular Tournament at Lord's. It was the famous match where NASA pointed three fingers at his back. Because somebody had suggested he shouldn't be number three for England. But NASA got 100, and it looked like England would win. I think they got 320 or something, which was a lot of runs in those days. But Yuvraj got 69 off 63 balls and batted beautifully with Mohammad Kaif. He was pretty young at the time, must have been about 20. And then we interviewed him afterwards in the Lords Museum, and he was sitting there chewing gum and looking really nonchalant and very, I just thought, what a very cool guy.
Yeah.
And then I really enjoyed watching him again in this winter's IPL, batted beautifully, one of those 360 players we were talking about.
Yeah.
So a long career, and in the middle, well, practically the middle, he had cancer, didn't he? So he's been through quite a journey.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it puts it all into context. I can remember that moment vividly, watching him make his comeback, that comeback game, and thinking, you know, I struggle to get out of bed in the morning sometimes, and I've got a bit of a cold. And here's this guy who's just overcome what is a deadly disease. And here he is, tonking it all over the ground. You know, fantastic inspiration. But tomorrow, here we go again, mate. You've got him out.
Twice.
Oh, there he is. There he is. Right, talk me through it. What's it like to bowl at him? How did it happen?
Well, I've not bowled too many balls at him, really. But no, he's, as I said, he's another one of these guys that we spoke about. Chris Gayle, Kevin Peterson. He's another big man. He's an imposing man. Obviously, we've seen the sixes he could hit, the power, the kind of the elegance and the grace at the same time. But yeah, I bowled him, you know, playing for England out in India. He'd scored. I think he'd hit Chris Jordan for quite a few runs the over before as a T20 on a flat wicket in Bangalore. And then I came on to bowl, I think it was the last over of the innings, and bowled him a slower ball, and you know, he edged it behind to the keeper, which was nice. So it was nice to see the back of him. And then he was my first wicket in the IPL a few months after. Managed to come in and bowl him at the death. But you know, this was definitely the kind of the back end of his career. I definitely didn't bowl at him at, you know, when he was at his pomp. You know, Stuart Broad will obviously tell you a little bit more about that kind of legendary six sixes in the over, which you still don't see very often now, do you? You know, that's an incredible feat. Never mind to do it. He did it was it a World Cup in South Africa
when
World T20? Like, so to do it on the international stage, you know, yeah. It makes the news if somebody does it in club cricket, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So to do it in a stage like that was pretty special.
Have you ever spoken to Broadie about that?
No, I don't think many people would.
Don't bring it up in it. Yeah,
I mentioned about what his one day record, I think, because he. Been a bit, and he got a little bit, a lovely interview with him, but that one bit I thought, oh, I shouldn't have asked that.
What, well, he gets a bit spiky, does he?
A little bit spiky about his white ball record for England, because he kind of remembered for that, isn't he? And a little bit, but he's got quite a decent one day record, yeah. I think. Yeah, who was the other six sixes? Dean Van Bung, the Dutch.
Did Herschel Gibbs do it at all?
Herschel Gibbs.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, no, but you're
Dan
right.
Dan Van Bung or Dean Van Bung. Or
you're right, I forgot about
Dutch
that
leg spinner, yeah. It was Herschel Gibbs, yeah.
I remember the Netherlands beat England at World Cup. It was rain affected, but I seem to
World T20 at Lords, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
That was a bit of a hiding, wasn't it?
And then
it?
We beat they beat an England 11. Peter Roebuck was captain in about 1989.
Fantastic stuff. Well, there we are. Hopefully, we don't get any repeats of anything quite like
that.
It's
in Amsterdam, and I think England. Part of the local facilities.
Yeah.
Too much.
Hard to get up for a game, innit, when you've just seen the bright lights of Amsterdam. Yeah, definitely.
Too much Heineken.
Too much Heineken. Yeah, good. Yeah, that's the one, definitely. Right, look, I just want to have a little bit of a chat about what some of the best performers so far at this World Cup. Mohammed Amir, I thought, was absolutely sensational yesterday. Tamal, get your take on him. I mean, obviously, he's had a bit of a checkered pass. He's got 10 wickets so far this tournament, bowled 156 balls, gone for 123 runs. Not a bad return, is it?
No, it's good. And as you say, yesterday he was brilliant. He's had a really lean kind of year or so playing for Pakistan. I played with him in the PSL the year before last.
What's he like as a bloke?
Lovely guy. Yeah, really nice guy. You know, loves his country as a lot of the Pakistanis do. They're very patriotic, very passionate about Pakistan cricket. And he's, you know, he's a bloody good bowler. He's a very, very good bowler.
Yeah.
He's when he's on form, he swings it at good pace, and he's got, you know, good skills. You know, and as a lot of cricketers and sports people in general, you know, go through lean spells. And he went through maybe one that was longer than most. He got an extended run in the side because they backed his, you know, they had faith in his ability. But unfortunately, he wasn't able to come good, so they dropped him. You know, and now he's come back in the team, and under the big lights of the World Cup, he's definitely shining.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Who fired him up then the other day? Somebody criticised him, didn't they? Oh, it was Misbah or Hack, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Said he wasn't bowling quick enough. So I suppose that's the classic kind of, oh, you're not barely getting it down the other end. Come on, you know.
child psychology.
Yeah, put your back in there. It worked, doesn't it?
Do you find you bowl back when you're fired up, T, or not bothered?
I'm not that, no, not really.
You don't strike me as that type of guy that gets too wound up.
No, I'll get angry at myself if I'm bowling particularly poorly or something, but I'm not a... You know, I'm not. I like to try and stay pretty level. You know, whether I'm going well or not.
Fair play, Hugh. Look, who stood out with the ball so far for you this World Cup, or anyone that you think is going to come good in the end?
Well, come good in the end. New Zealand have impressed me so far. Matt Henry and so on. Shane Thomas. Lockie Ferguson. Yeah. Pat Cummings is my favourite. I love watching him bowl.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. I've got him in the office. Not the sweepstake, but the predictions as to who's going to finish top wicket taker. So I've got Pat Cummings.
Not far
he's
off.
He's going to come good. Yeah, I don't know.
I was thinking as well in terms of with the bat. I mean, actually, like people like Quentin de Kock have performed phenomenally well. They've had to in that South African team. Don't get me wrong. Unfortunately, they've toiled away for not a lot of reward in the end. But when it comes to the end of the tournament, I mean, David Warner, I thought, really stood up to be counted yesterday. You know, look, there's no secret about the controversy that's courted him around. And I think he is a little bit hard done by the fact that he looks a bit like a pit bull. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think he's just
got
one.
That's his nickname, isn't
it? Yeah,
the bull.
That's exactly.
What,
have you had much interaction with him? Have you bowled at him much?
I've bowled at him. He hit me. I remember I was at Essex. This was quite a few years ago. And we played Australia in a 50-over tour game before they were about to play England in a series. And I was kind of, at the time, maybe 20. You know, the young tearaway fast bowler that, you know, I fancied myself a bit. And I remember I came on first change. I thought, nah, David Warner, he's not good enough for me. And I bowled him as quick a bouncer as I could. And then he hit me over the pavilion at Lord's. at Chelmsford. So brought me back down to earth with a bang. But yeah, I bowled at him in a few leagues, you know, in and around. But yeah, as you say, he copped a bit of flack for how he batted in the first few games in terms of the pace of his innings. You know, chewed up a lot of balls. But he's a class batsman. I don't think that can, you know, take away. You look at his record; it'll be right up there with anybody else in the world.
I don't know what he was doing against India, though. Do you? I mean, it was puzzling innings, wasn't it?
It was a bit. It was like an audition for his Test match position, back, wasn't it? Hugh, I thought.
But then he came good in the most recent game. Yeah. But
Hugh, I just want to get you quickly on Jason Roy. Now, you know, he's been in and out a little bit. Looks very settled now, I think.
Yeah, but a lot of them have had three games and one shocker and two good games, haven't they? Aaron Finch, I mean, look at the consistency of Aaron Finch. I think he's been really consistent so far, hasn't he? But Warner had one shocker, Roy had one shocker, didn't he? Where he was out cheaply, dropped a catch and used the referral ridiculously. But no, I mean, he's good. Yeah, he's an amazing talent, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if we're talking about this later, but I think probably they will go with him in the Ashes, won't they?
Yes, well, that is it. I think they probably should. I mean, there has been a little bit of, there's been a gap there, hasn't there, since Alistair Cook decided to hang up his bat, and he looks like someone who might be able to fill it.
Well, I think there's a logic to him opening with his Surrey partner, Rory Burns, isn't there?
Do you think that
left
will make a
right,
good...
Left and right, cautious and aggressive, you know, good, they're quite a good combo, maybe, I don't know.
Absolutely. Well, look, just before we kind of wrap, really, Hugh, you've got a new edition of the Cricketer magazine coming out, and I want you to tell us all about it, please.
Yeah, we've got coming out a week on Friday, the July edition of the Cricketer. We've got Simon Hughes, Devon Malcolm, Greg Chappell, Alison Mitchell, so a nice lineup of people. We've got George DeBell talking about the hundreds with some very strong views.
Go on, give us this little sneak preview.
Should we support the 100? I'm still not convinced. It will, in my view, damage cricket, whether it works or not. And I still believe there's a better way. The people who led us into this mess didn't ask for our views when coming to these decisions. They don't get to demand our support now their jobs are on the line.
Right, you weren't lying then. No, fantastic. I want to get you on that. The 100, is it? Because look, there's this argument, isn't there? That maybe the money that we spent on it, we could have spent on putting a roof over some of the stadiums and we'd have seen a bit more cricket.
The 4 minutes we've got left isn't long enough to talk about the pros and cons of the 100. People obviously feel very strongly one way or another, but I guess time will tell.
Yeah, exactly. Look, and I think at the end of the day, cricket does need to do something maybe to appeal a little bit more to a younger demographic. Look, if this works,
I don't hate the format. I've played 100 and it's quite good actually. It's quite quick and you get through the overs, get the 10 times 10. Yeah. I think some of the names leaked are a bit weird.
Yeah.
And it is a gamble, I guess, an expensive gamble. The amount they've spent on it is an expensive gamble. So if it doesn't work, then there's going to be questions as to how and why they've got through so much money, reportedly 80 million.
Mm. I do quite like the idea that, especially around the kind of London area, that you could finish work, you go for a couple of beers with your mates, and you could just sit there and just watch a relatively concise period of cricket. You definitely get a result at the end of it, and then you all get off, you know?
Yeah, the 2020 Cup was concise when it started. It was an hour and a quarter in innings. It's only in recent times that things have got out of hand, and the IPL matches some of the last four hours, don't they?
Yeah.
But you could still make people play 2020 in 75 minutes, and the match could be over in 2 3/4 if you restrict about it.
Well, time will
tell. And you could have two overs from each end. You could still play T20 and have two overs from each end. Or even four overs from each end.
I think we need to sit down and just redesign the game. You should have been sat in on this like this kind of think tank meeting. No. Definitely here. But look, thank you very, very much for tuning in for this edition of The Inside Edge on Love Sport with The Cricketer magazine. Tamal, thank you so much. And Hugh Turbeville as well, of course, of The Cricketer magazine. Stay tuned because Johnny Burrow is going to be hot-footing into the studio very, very shortly with our fan shows. If you want to get in touch with him, it's 0208 7020 558. I'll be back on your Drive Time show tomorrow.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.